All right, Thursday night, baby Friday on the Fan pregame on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, the Fan. After us will be the Nets and the Raptors, the 7:30 tip. At Scotiabank, we'll have that on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet East. And it looks like Scotty Barnes will be back in the lineup for the tank off between the Nets and the Raptors.
Yeah, I mean, I was getting real concerned about, like, the integrity aspect of all this with a team like the Brooklyn Nets coming through and all these guys supposedly not available for the Toronto Raptors. But Scotty Barnes, after a two-game absence, will be back, so I can't really call that many shenanigans. But just the list of players who are out tonight. RJ Barrett, now with an illness. Emmanuel Quickley, we know the story there. Jakob Poeltl, now missing some time. Davion Mitchell was questionable. He will play. Bruce Brown, of course, has been out for a long time. That's a pretty good list of players for the Toronto Raptors who won't be playing or won't be counted upon against the Brooklyn Nets, who come in with a better record but with similar expectations coming into the season. So a big one in the Capture the Flag sweepstakes.
Raptors 3-point favorites somehow.
I can't really believe that.
We'll have Michael Grange join us at 6:30. To help tee up tonight's game. We got a lot of hockey on the network as well tonight. St. Louis, Tampa, Boston, Edmonton, a lot on Sportsnet Plus. So let's bring in Frank Saravelli, president of content at Daily Faceoff. Frank, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
We're pretty good. Winding down before the holiday break. But we got a lot to go through with you today. We've been putting in lots of topics in our doc. So let's start with the, it's just overwhelming. Let's start with the news that happened right after we got off the air. It always happens this way. Capo traded last night from the Rangers to Seattle. So is this the first of many moves ahead for the Rangers? They have a lot to figure out, but does this open the floodgates, or is one enough for them?
No, look, this is the second in a series of trades, I think. How many parts to this saga will there be? Probably 3, 4, or 5, I'd say, when it's all said and done between subtracting and adding. And look, I think when you consider the overall nature of how this unfolded, the New York Rangers needed to make a decision on Capo Caco. He was a pending restricted free agent with 1 year then separating him from unrestricted free agency. So the end of this season, they were facing a decision. We're either signing this guy or we're moving on from him at some point prior to that. And his comments, I think, this week, they're not the reason he got traded, but I think what they did is certainly hasten it. Mm.
So how would you readjust your expectations for this group? Like, obviously, the water is pretty turbulent. Can water be turbulent? I'm not really sure, but it is turbulent right now.
It is there.
For the New York Rangers. Like, when you readjust, like, let's say they pull off a series of, like, pretty good moves. It's not going to be the fix-all, I'm sure, but they manage to rid themselves of some of the things that have made this situation as rotten as it is. Like, do you still believe that there's some upside here for this group?
Yeah, I do. I think you only have to look to the Boston Bruins this year, right? They started pretty poorly. They made their coaching change, and now they're a handful of points away from the division lead. I think the Rangers are in even better shape than the Bruins. And I think if you want to look at Chris Drury's track record to this point, whether it was not having to pay to move off of Barkley Goodrow or not having to retain any salary on Jacob Trouba and getting a small asset in return, or even this latest deal with bringing in Will Borgen, who I think is exactly what that New York Ranger team needs, a steady Eddie defenseman that's not going to create waves, not going to have big turnovers, not going to give up home runs. That's what that group needed on their back end. So, you know, it's not a trade that's going to make headlines for New York in a positive way. Ranger fans are upset that they gave up on Kaapo Kähkönen, but I think we've got 330 games worth of sample size to indicate that you got to take that draft status and where he was picked at number 2 overall and throw that out the window. We have a really good idea after 5.5 NHL seasons of what Kaapo Kähkönen is, and more importantly, what he isn't. So I get it from Seattle's perspective to, you know, want to take a flyer on a guy that had some upside at one point in time. I think on a perfect scenario and situation, maybe Capo Caco can become a consistent 20-goal scorer. But he hasn't done that yet. He hasn't hit 20 yet. And to do it consistently is a whole different thing. So for the Rangers moving forward, yeah, I think if they add the right pieces and they do this in a deliberate and considerate way, which I think Chris Drury is all about, that why can't this team, with Igor Shesterkin playing better and some of their forwards, Chris Kreider and Mika Zibanejad, finding a bit of a groove again if they're still there, Why not?
Where do you think the frustration or the, I guess, tension is directed if you were to be sitting in that locker room? Like, is it at the GM, at the coaching staff, at some of the way that this team has been constructed? Like, where are the fingers being pointed if you're in that locker room?
I think they should be pointed squarely at themselves. This is a team that went to the Eastern Conference Final last year. I think the management group felt like they wanted to make some changes over the summer and were hamstrung and couldn't do it. I think moving forward, this team should have been playing much better than they have to this point this year. Zibanejad has been incredibly inconsistent. Kreider hasn't produced at the level that we expect of him. Go up and down the list, there have been different question marks and issues that are solely with the production and performance of these players. Even the last couple weeks, as they've been in this downward spiral, Igor Shesterkin's played some of the worst hockey of his tenure as a New York Ranger. All those things kind of conspiring against them at once. And it speaks to the mental fragility of this team. If Chris Drury is going to put out a memo to the rest of the league and say, hey, I'm open for business and I'd like to potentially move on from Jacob Trouba and Chris Kreider, If that's the way you react and you can't get out of your own way and out of your own head, it says more about the players than anyone else.
So big-ish news, I guess, in Leafland with Matt Murray being tabbed for Friday night versus the Buffalo Sabres. It's an interesting move because there is a selection of goaltenders for which the Maple Leafs could choose to play in this game to back up Joseph Woll to be part of the now for the Maple Leafs. But I think it's interesting in that, you know, there's been a lot of investment into this asset, into Matt Murray. Parts of three seasons, they've at least had Matt Murray on the roster, and he's barely played any hockey since his first year. Other than Stanley Cup pedigree for Matt Murray, your understanding is what of like why there's been some continued devotion, why they've believed that Matt Murray could be something, that they've got to this point now where an injury did happen, and they can go to Matt Murray after so many months of him not being an option for them.
Well, the upside is what we saw in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like when you're a Stanley Cup champion and you're able to do that in a pressure-packed environment, of course you want to see if he can get to that same precipice again and see if he can get there. Look, the injury situation was ugly, and he's rebounded from that, and his numbers with the Marlies have been quite good. They've given an opportunity to, you know, come back and rehab his game and to find himself again. Did it in a mostly pressure-free environment. And now it's, can you play? Like, can you park all those other things? Can you park the pressure of, you know, now getting an opportunity to perform? Can you park the injury history? Can you park the lack of success that you had when you were previously at the NHL level? Those are all really big questions to ask. But the upside is, maybe even not for your own organization, like, nice to have an insurance piece. You could also potentially at some point have a trade chip. Mm-hmm. So I think, why not? I'm always interested in finding out as much intel and information as possible. And it's just another box to check on the mission here for Brad Treliving and the Leafs front office. What do we have here? And can Matt Murray be something again?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the trade piece aspect of it. But this is a guy who's survived multiple regimes, who's brought back once again. And this is not an organization historically that's been able to be like, well, we can just reserve a spot for a reclamation project, because they haven't been able to actually develop goaltenders. And all of a sudden they do have two young goaltenders who are competing with Matt Murray four-time at the Marlies, at the Marley level. But they've stuck with this. And I think it is interesting for that reason. I think Leafs fans are very intrigued with what they're going to see on Friday.
I was going to say, add in one quick thing too. Bringing up Matt Murray allows those other two guys at the Marlies to compete there and get them more time in the net. So it's beneficial for everyone.
Perfect time to bring up the team the Leafs are going to play. The Buffalo Sabres, winless in 11. Terry came into town, and besides bringing in Josh Allen, like, I mean, that team is a disaster. I guess that message didn't inspire much. What needs to happen for the Buffalo Sabres?
They need change, I think, plain and simple. Now, the big question is, will it come before the trade freeze tonight? I'm keeping my eye on
a few hours away, right?
Yeah, we're just under 6 hours away from that trade freeze setting in, and it will be in place through the early morning hours of December 27th. So for me, just checking in on that situation today, I think Kevin Adams has been on the phone constantly the last few weeks trying to figure this thing out. There hasn't been much by way of, concrete. It's been talks and a lot of it, but nothing really concrete that the Sabres have been able to sink their teeth into, is my understanding. And I'm told that even leading up to the freeze tonight, his phone is on, but it doesn't seem like anything's imminent. I am keeping an eye on the Vancouver Canucks, though, and their quest for a top four defenseman that's a puck mover. I am keeping an eye on the Nashville Predators and their increased cap space all of a sudden after the Alex Carrier trade last night. Barry Trotz has made it no secret that he wants a center, and he's pushing to try and fix and rectify that. So at least two teams on the radar tonight leading up to the trade freeze. And it's not to say that the Sabres aren't one of them, but I think they're on the back burner for now, trying to make sure that as much as they want to make change, that it's not a panicked overreaction that costs them more long term.
I'm glad you brought up Barry Trotz, because I know I saw his messages today with The Athletic saying that we are not selling off, we are resetting. We know where we are. It's not where we thought we would be, but we want to move forward. So that's buying, that's, you know, resetting in a sense of trying to stay, like, respectable in this season. Like, what does that mean for the next couple months for what the Nashville Predators are trying to accomplish?
Probably a bunch of those things. It's also, it's buying, but it's, you know, moving the pieces around in the puzzle and trying to figure out a new fit and see if they can come up with a different combination, because it's not working. And one of the big reasons it's not working is because they don't have any center depth. They've got Ryan O'Reilly, who, with all due respect to him and where he's at with his game, he's on hole 16 of his career. He is on a really good Stanley Cup contending team. Ryan O'Reilly is a 3C. And, you know, when you spend part of your year trying to figure out, hey, is Juuso Parsonen, can he be our 2C? What about Tommy Novak? Like, these aren't fun questions to be asking in the middle of a season for a team that started the year with true cup contender aspirations by the nature of which they spent money this past summer. So they've got a lot of work to do, and it's, you know, this year has been trying for so many reasons and different fits that I think Barry Trotz has to consider so many different options. But here's ultimately what I'm left with, is which team is trading a legit top six centerpiece right now? It's really hard to do.
That's where I was going next, because you mentioned Vancouver looking for the defenseman, lots of teams looking for the center. It seems like any team that is looking for something is looking for one of those two things. What would you say the ratio is from buyers to actual sellers with these items? Maybe defense and center would be different, and they definitely are, because as you mentioned it, the impact centers of our very short supply. But what's the ratio? Is it like 4-1 buyers to actual sellers with reasonable parts that they're ready to move on from?
It feels like, on a percentage basis, 95-5, yeah. 97-3. Like, it's, there's a whole host of other teams out there that are willing to mix it up and get in the conversation, because they'll try anything. I think you'd have to include the Flyers there. You know, do you see Morgan Frost as one of those options? I think you'd have to include the Carolina Hurricanes. Even though they've been successful this year, they're open for whatever it is that might come across their plate that makes sense. There's that collection of teams kind of separate and aside. And then you've got some other teams that are at the bottom of the standings that just aren't ready to sell yet, or don't have, really, the key is, it's not even that they're not ready to sell, it's just they don't have that much to offer. Mm-hmm. So that's the other tough part of this, is like the typical trade partners that you'd normally find in late February, early March, you can go raid their roster, but who are you taking? Who's going to actually make your team better at this point in time?
Is it like, shouldn't Buffalo then be in a decent position right now? Because they do have parts. They don't have the success. They have no, they just lost 11 in a row. It's not happening this year.
They're winless in 11. Don't mess it up.
How dare I? But like, they obviously have guys. They have guys on their team. Like, if they want to make a trade, if it's such a vacuum right now, they should be able to make a trade that looks better in the end than it did with Eichel and O'Reilly and down the list.
Can I nitpick with you for a sec?
Sure.
Kalish, like, every time for the last 11 games, they have skated off
I agree. I'm doing that facetiously. I think they have lost the last 11, but we get enough feedback that, you know, we should.
I don't understand when they say winless. Did you, if you lost in overtime or a shootout,
I agree.
Still lost.
We're all fighting the same battle here.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to check.
Yeah, but
yeah, like I do agree with your premise, Justin, that they should be in a great spot. The problem is, at least as it's been relayed to me, is they seem to also really like their own players. I think the tougher part for Kevin Adams to wrestle with is I really like the pieces I've assembled here, but the overall collection, the sum of its parts, is no good, and it's not getting the job done. And even when we have a day like Monday, we sit down, we meet, the owner pumps our tires, he tells us that he believes in us. They start the next night 19 seconds in Montreal, the only team below them in the standings in the East, and they're already down. So inexcusable. I think they recognize that. And I'd say when you're chopping up the Sabres roster, there's pieces, of course, that Kevin Adams is more ready to move on from than others. But there's also, you know, a notion here of he's ready to consider anything himself. He has to. It's just, like, if he's not considering everything right now, I don't know what we're looking at here.
This feels like, you know, a classic case of past mistakes preventing a solution from, you know, actually coming to the fore here, which is too bad because it feels like something's got to happen. And if they just, you know, they're leaning on what happened before, they're scared to do it again, it's going to make it impossible to break through. Patrick Laine has been, speaking of trades and impact additions, Patrick Laine in 7 games leads the NHL in scoring per 60, goals per 60. Again, small sample size, but he's been really, really good and a game changer here for the Habs in a short sample. Is he reasonable? Like, is that the missing piece? Like, the top six for Montreal now is something that truly you can build with. The defense score obviously has a bit of a ways to go, but does Montreal have the mix here now with Patrick Laine?
I'm not ready to make that declaration yet. There's still so many other parts of the puzzle for Montreal that are missing. Is it nice to have another scorer like that that can give you a shot in the arm? Of course. I think more than anything, I'm impressed just with how Patrick Laine has handled himself. We were all curious. You leave Winnipeg, you go to Columbus. Now you're back in a pressure cooker in Montreal. Can you handle the white hot spotlight of that market? And it seems like to this point, he's been the belle of the ball. Like, he's been the person that everyone's been looking towards. He's been this sort of next great hope in another really disappointing season. So it's an exciting thought process. It's exciting to think about, you know, what that might look like, you know, 3 steps down the line for Montreal as they're trying to figure out what that ultimate, hey, this is our team that could, you know, compete for a playoff spot and more. Can he be part of that solution? Of course. Is he going to be the driving force in that? I don't think I'm anywhere close to being ready to say that.
We're talking with Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff. Okay, so this is kind of a weird one, but you brought it up on your Twitter, so I wanted to dig in a little deeper. Canadian dollar is brutal. So if you want to come up and shop here, it's nice for you. But I guess it got me thinking about how, and you tweeted out as well, like NHL revenue, because a lot of it comes from the Canadian markets and future expansion talks. Like, how big of a, why are you laughing?
I'm just thinking about our dollar.
Our dollar sucks. But how much is this, how much is this going to affect future or current NHL discussions and talks about Canada and its role in the NHL?
It affects it in a marginal way. I think the league has way better protected itself and its teams from a very significant material impact. But the bottom line is this for anyone that is watching the currency on a daily basis is Canadian teams are earning revenue for the most part in Canadian dollars, and they're paying out salaries in US dollars. So everything is that much more expensive, and it does contribute to, you know, an easy back of the napkin math to think about what that means when you take all 7 Canadian teams and any sort of national Canadian revenue that gets thrown into the HRR pot that's then split between players and owners. Every cent that it drops, you're looking at a $20 million evaporation or loss in HRR. So the league is, and the NHLPA are certainly paying attention. The fact that this has been a somewhat historical drop this year has certainly caught their attention. You know, this is the first time since 2002 that the Canadian dollar is under 70 US cents. And that is problematic. It's just not problematic for the NHL in the way that it used to be.
ultimate dumb guy point, but like good to be a player for a Canadian market, living in Canada all the time, making US dollars. Does that matter at all? Like that's
everyone's going to want to
get
traded.
No one talks about this, but if you're Mitch Marner and you're making USD and living and spending that money exclusively in Canada, is there not some advantage there?
I mean, it's nice for sure. Like, I mean, think about Connor McDavid. So that next contract for him, if he's making $16 million a year, now all of a sudden it's north of 20 in Canadian dollars.
I'm saying. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
It's a big difference. You mentioned 7 days, no transactions. Phones will be off among general managers. I'm not sure about your phone.
What's
the percentage of time where you're going to get like 24 hours phone off of the 7 days? Can you completely park it during the holidays?
I would love that. I don't think it's like, unfortunately, I think I'm too wired in, like just habitually. And the screen time for me is like the most alarming thing. Like when you get to like,
you gotta
hey,
share
you were on your phone for 13 hours and 44 minutes yesterday. Like, you're just like, dude, that's a sickness.
Mm.
Do you have any holiday plans? Anything fun, Frank?
We host Christmas Eve at the Saravalli's and... I'm in charge of appetizers and drinks. So.
Wow, that's a great job.
It's a big task.
Yeah, so can't like I was working on this. It's an array. I'm going to tell you, it's a smorgasbord. I've got some cheesesteak egg rolls. I've got pot stickers. I've got a really good goat cheese salad. I've got some coconut shrimp, a shrimp tray, and any pasta.
Yeah.
Trying to think if I'm forgetting.
How many people are coming?
No one's going to make it to dinner.
Yeah, we got to, like, you got to have some kind of buffalo wing. So yes. We're going to do some boneless wings. And by the way, no Christmas Eve, no party is complete without the little cocktail Franks, the little hot dogs.
Wow.
Franks.
That sounds lovely. Well, we won't get to chat with you until after the holiday. So enjoy it and take some downtime, Frank. 13 hours, let's push that to 11 hours screen time, okay? You got this.
It's sad. Thanks, guys, and everyone that's watched all year long. Thanks so much, and happy holidays.
All right, we'll see you in the new year, Frank. That's Frank Saravalli, president of Condé Nast Daily Faceoff. Wow, we have to start saying that to people. See you next year.
Christmas is sounding like a tailgate at the
Saravalli's. That's amazing.
That's not what my Christmas looks like.
What do you guys got?
I don't know. It's not like... tailgate food.
No, I'm obsessed with that
there
menu.
There might be a charcuterie board.
Let's just drive to Philly and knock on doors.
Two selections of cheeses. Yeah, I might need to show up.
That sounds gorgeous.
Frank's Franks.
Yeah, I don't know.
Post-career business there?
I like an actual hot dog, you know, not the little
one. Christmas Eve, you want to...
No, I wouldn't.
A hot dog?
That's why I was a bit surprised when he said buffalo wings and hot dogs. I'm like, where are we, to Bill's tailgate here?
Yeah, that's...
But no, like the other stuff he had to say there, coconut shrimp, a shrimp ring...
It's a little offbeat, that stuff, isn't it, for Christmas?
No, shrimp is like
it's the shrimp, whatever,
the shrimp
bowl
ring has to exist
with the cocktail sauce or whatever. Like that's a classic, but the full coconut shrimp is.
I mean, he's a classy
level.
Guy.
He is classy.
Glasses it up. All right, it's funny about the Canadian dollar, but serious problem we're having here. You know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not great.
But if you're a Canadian getting paid in American dollars here.
I've said this for a long time. I think that's a massive advantage. If you can make U.S. dollars living in Canada and that converts to Canadian dollars and that's the only thing you're doing, that's a huge advantage. Where it's not advantage is, you know, the high tax states where, you know, where your cost of living in New York and you're not getting any benefits there. California, the same thing.
You're definitely not. All right, we're going to have Michael Grange join us in about 5 minutes after the break. There, we got the Nets and the Raptors on next on Sportsnet, Sportsnet Ontario, and Sportsnet East, 7:30 tip at Scotiabank Arena. Getting some injury updates. Looks like Scotty Barnes will be in the lineup. You know, every day is a different story with this team, but it's a tank-worthy matchup tonight.
Yeah, tank-worthy matchup. Jordy, the difference, I wonder, we'll ask Grange about this. You know, Jordy Fernandez coaching this Nets team and doing a really... really good job. Not to
He's
say Darko isn't doing a good job, but if there's one coach that's like ensuring that they're getting more out of their team from a wins loss perspective, I feel like it's Jordy Fernandez.
Yeah, he's doing that. We also have the winner. I mentioned it earlier yesterday. We got over $1 million to our raffle.
Well over.
We'll announce it
late
later.
Late surge.
It's already been announced, but we'll celebrate the individual.
Sure.
All right, we'll come right back on the Fan Pregame.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on The Fan pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the next half hour. After us, Sportsnet will have Brooklyn and Toronto, a 7:30 tip at Scotiabank Arena. That's on Sportsnet Ontario. And Sportsnet East, if you're looking for some hockey action, we got quite a few games on Sportsnet Plus. And on Sportsnet 1 and Pacific, we've got St. Louis and Tampa and Boston and Edmonton a little later on. And then Sportsnet 360's got the King. Oh, no, that's the Lakers and the Kings.
It's a busy night. It's a busy night.
We got lots going on, folks. Yeah. Just peruse at your own accord.
Yeah, if it's on tonight, it's on Sportsnet, Sportsnet Plus. It's very, very exciting. But yeah, the Raptors and Nets, that's a big one we're going to go to next year. And we mentioned it. It's kind of, you raise your eyebrow a little bit when it's like, okay, the Nets are coming into town. The Nets have a better record, but they're not supposed to necessarily be better than the Raptors. And you're getting all this information on who's available and who's not available. And it's mostly, well, those who are unavailable, with Scotty Barnes being an option here tonight, and obviously he'll be the main option for Darko Rajakovic. I don't think we have to go too deep down that well, but just this is the list of available players for the Raptors tonight. Scotty Barnes, Grady Dick, Ochai Agbaji, Fernando Mobo, Olynyk, Shed, Boucher, cool. Walter. Like, it falls off a cliff real fast, and there's just no way around it. Like, this has been a really, really difficult season.
There's barely enough players
from
to play.
An injury perspective. Yeah, it's like they're running on fumes every night, it seems like. And RJ Barrett being out, he's been like kind of the main constant. He's always been available. He's been the guy. Him out with an illness, it's just like everything that could happen from a availability perspective has happened this year for the Raptors.
So is the tank back on? Like, you look at this, you look at the projections moving forward, we got a couple more games until a little bit of a break, but I mean, are we back on team tank?
Yeah, well, the Raptors are on a 5-game losing streak.
That helps.
Yeah, but this is a big game. Like, these are the games. These are the 4-point games.
These are the games you got to lose.
Steal a phrase from the NHL. Like, this is pretty big. I think only four games under 500 so far this season. Brooklyn expected to be one of the worst teams in the league, but they haven't been, I guess,
They're
running into
16,
the same. Or sorry, 6 games below 500. They haven't been running into the same issues, at least from availability perspective. That being said, they won't have Cam Thomas tonight, who's one of the top 15 scorers in the NBA when available, but he's missed a chunk of time. But other than that, it hasn't been as tumultuous, at least it seems, like it has been for the Toronto Raptors. That's part of the reason that they have the record that they have a worse record than the Nets. But also part of that is just that they haven't been able to win basketball games in the clutch. They played a lot of competitive games and they've come up empty in a lot of those games. So it depends on how you look at it. Depends what your objective is. It depends what's really the priority. But if you just want to see the best version of the Toronto Raptors, it's been slim pickings this year.
This is a bigger question. And when we get Grange on, we can sprinkle it in as well. But, you know, obviously I've been hearing a lot and seeing a lot about how just generally right now the NBA's ratings are plummeting in terms of just people tuning in, like the fan interest in a sense. What do you pinpoint that on? Because a lot of people are saying, oh, too many three-pointers. But, like, is it as simple as that? Is there just a lack of star power? Is there a lack of young stars that you really want to, like, sink your teeth in? The older guard, whether that's, you know, the people of, like, LeBron James and KD and Steph Curry, I still think they're relevant enough. You want to tune in to see what their last chapter looks like. I can't really pinpoint. Is it like what we're talking about with the NHL last week, lack of elite teams?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. I mean, I do think the NBA Cup is like a solid step forward, at least in trying to own this part of the calendar. I can only speak from my own experience, like being around the rare occurrences that I'm around younger people. Like, I used to be absolutely obsessed. Like, if I'm coming home from school in grade 11, 12, obsessed. And the people like in my family that I know, like, it's not like that. It's not like that for any kids. I think the way kids are growing up now, it's like a little different where you don't have that groundswell of support coming up because there's other interests and they're doing other things and there's other options. But I do think it's still at the fore. I just think it's being consumed in a different way, and it's not being consumed with the television metric side being overly favorable, if that makes any sense. Like, maybe they're catching up in different ways. They're catching up on their phone rather than sitting in front of the television watching 2.5 hours of a game like it seemed like me and my friends did every night growing up. I just feel like it's different, and it's something that's would be considered a moving target that they have to try and get a better handle on.
Yeah, I saw Boston.
It's the same thing for the NHL.
You know, it's. I think it's just, yeah, I think there's a lot of other things to consume. Joe Mazzulla, Boston Celtics head coach, was asked about this as well, and he said, that, you know, he doesn't watch many NBA games. He'd rather watch something else. Maybe that's just a bit different. You're very close to it. Like, but I also thought if you were,
he's
a unique character.
Yeah.
But if you're right in it, I always wonder, like, do NBA players come home and be like, I got to watch what other teams are doing? Or do you need to, like, step back and say, I need a break from it? But Joe Mazzulla, not interested in watching. That's your Joe Mazzulla update of the day. All right. Michael Grange of Sportsnet joins us as we tee up Raptors Nets tonight on Sportsnet. How's it going, Grange?
It's going good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we love having you on. Happy early holidays and happy early new year.
It's not that early.
Anyway. No. It's not. It's right around the corner, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is, if there was ever a time to be wishing people happy holidays or Merry Christmas, this would be it.
It sneaks up on you. We'll make sure we get it in.
November, we change the subject.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. All right. Let's start with tonight's game. Two teams, maybe not. Are they both kind of in the tankathon here, in the tank watch? But the Raptors look like they will have Scottie Barnes back in the lineup tonight. So your latest on the injuries with Scottie, he seems like he's back in. But tonight, two teams that are not really, okay, I feel bad saying it, not really wanting to win. They want to win. But you know what I mean? You know, two teams that are kind of in the bottom.
Yeah, I mean the if there's a moral high ground here, I think it kind of goes to the Raptors. Who have really been dealing with, as we know, some fairly legitimate and obvious injuries, and, you know, a very, very difficult schedule, one of the hardest in the league. And you know, their seven wins, or I guess I should say their 20 losses, feel mostly organic. Mm-hmm. I have said and do caution that there are going to be more nights like this as the schedule, especially in the last third of their schedule, when there's a lot of Brooklyns and there's a lot of Wizards and there's a lot of Utahs and Portlands. And, you know, we'll see how this ethical tanking looks then. But, you know, I think Brooklyn signaled their intentions when they traded to regain control of their own first round picks. And that would signal to me that they're very interested in those picks being as high as possible. And you know, when you trade away your best player and highest scorer in December, Dennis Schroeder, for a guy who can't play in De'Anthony Melton, who's up for the season with an ACL, you know, I think your intentions are clear. And you know, maybe given the competition, that's why so many of the Raptors are out, with RJ out with an illness and Davion Mitchell out with his shoulder, but Scottie is there. So, you know, their integrity is somewhat intact.
Yeah, my antenna was up until I saw that Scottie Barnes was playing. And then I got, okay, it's not like a complete tank job for a big game, I guess, in the lottery standings. But you mentioned moral high ground. I don't know if Jordy Fernandez is maybe playing by those same rules, because they played 26 games and they won 10 of them. And I think maybe the expectation was lower for this Nets team. Not that there's necessarily FOMO here, but Jordy Fernandez, if I'm not mistaken, has certainly proved himself to be a good prospect, not a prospect because he's in the position, but one of the up and coming coaches in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, he was on people's radar. He got interviewed for the Raptors job. You know, he kind of was, I don't want to say emergency, but kind of a last minute, you know, substitute when Nick Nurse had to leave Team Canada. And Jordy was parachuted into that job in a very difficult situation and handled himself really well at the World Cup of Basketball. And I think that experience, and I mean, he said so, was kind of maybe sort of the icing on the cake. It was kind of, you know, here was a guy who had a ton of experience around high-level head coaches as a lead assistant and internationally. And, you know, his resume had all the proper, you know, boxes checked. But maybe missing was the intensity and the pressure that comes with being a head coach. And he certainly proved himself at the World Cup in 2023. And, you know, that maybe was the difference in the Nets hiring him this season. As for FOMO, like, you know, I don't think you can look at what Darko Rajakovic has done in, you know, in the aggregate. And I include, you know, the kind of player development, the intentionality around player development that he's implemented in his season and a third here, and some of the results we've seen. And, you know, and I just think that the overall footprint he's left in terms of cohesiveness, culture, cooperation with the front office. I mean, it's been a very transparent and a very seamless experience. Given, you know, the reality is he's been set up to lose more games than win. And you know, so I think, you know, let's presume things go well for the Raptors and they do end up in a situation where they get a really good player in this draft. And I, like I've said before, that I don't think that next year we'll be talking about them tanking again. I mean, I think next year will be very much about get a play-in spot, get a playoff spot. Let's run. And I think this time next year we'll get a fuller understanding of where Darko's talents lies at, coach. You know, because he's going to be coaching games that really matter, where losses really matter, and you know, and that's really well he'll get measured. I think Jordy's done a good job, but I think, you know, those 10 wins are pretty much enough through 26 games, and his challenge will be quite a bit different in the next 55 or so.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm looking forward to the day when we can sort of scrutinize Darko Rajakovic just a little bit. Like, it's been, yeah, it's only been a year and a bit, as you mentioned. It feels like it's been longer than that, and yet it feels like we can't really nitpick. We can't really scrutinize. We can't really criticize. He's, I guess, job one, aside from development, is creating the culture, and I guess he's doing a really good job in that sense. But at some point, you got to show you can win basketball games, and I'm looking forward to the day where that actually is priority number one. Grange, are you interested in seeing, you know, you mentioned Dennis Schroeder on the way out, Cam Thomas, leading scorer of the Nets, averaging more points than Wemby, Jaylen Brown, Kyrie Irving, among others, top 15 in the association, but has missed some time, so he's not eligible actually in the standings when you look at the NBA stats page. But, you know, I think, you know, they singled their attention, certainly, with Dennis Schroeder. But Cam Thomas might be a guy who can, you know, lots of talk about Jimmy Butler potentially going somewhere. LeBron James, more of a pipe dream. But in terms of, like, actual guys that can move and make a difference ahead of the trade deadline, is Cam Thomas near the top of the list?
I can see why people say that. I mean, he's a hugely productive scorer. And, you know, he is absolutely a bucket getter. I mean, there's no question about that. I think the question, as it relates to Cam Thomas, is he anything other than a bucket getter? And if he's your bucket getter, what is everyone else doing on the other four guys doing on the floor? Because that's sort of his, you know, that's his challenge, right? He knows how to get his, but, you know, there's four other guys playing too. So I could see him being, if he was amenable, being a good situational addition to certain teams, but there is no elite team, like a championship contending team, that is looking to inject him into their starting lineup, I don't think, just because he only knows how to play one way. And, you know, I think he's too early in his career to sort of be all about trying to fit in a role and all that. So, I mean, I think there's a place for him. I think he's going to have a career, but I mean, you know, the numbers aren't, I don't think, you know, your top eight or top 10 teams in this league are looking at his numbers and going, we got to have that. I think, you know, a guy, you know, to me, the guy that everyone's going to come running for is Dorian Finney-Smith. Completely different profile of a player, but, you know, what he represents is a plug and play solution who can start, I think, on good teams, can certainly come off the bench on very good teams, would be, I'm sure, very open to whatever role that might be on a good team, because he is, you know, a very reliable 3-point shooter. I think he's well over 40% this season, maybe 43% the last time I checked, and a very serviceable multi-position defender. And, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the teams that are really trying to get over the hump, those are the kinds of players that they're trying to find. Like, they, you know, the best teams in this league, they know where they're getting their offense from. Maybe they need a tweak here and there, but, you know, none of these teams can ever have enough shooting or wing defending. And so I think those are the guys who end up commanding a premium this time of year.
We're chatting with Michael Grange of Sportsnet. We got Brooklyn Nets, Toronto Raptors up on Sportsnet, Ontario and East right after us. I want to ask you about a recent article you wrote on Sportsnet.ca, one of many great ones, about who the Raptors could trade at the deadline. Now, I know it's a few days old now, but you had a couple names like Poeltl, Boucher, Brown, Olynyk, not necessarily like, hey, they're going to get traded, but maybe some pieces to ponder. Like, what's the most likely direction that the Raptors go if they're going to trade someone at the trade deadline? And I know these rankings will probably change multiple times before that deadline actually comes. Who would be someone that you think they would part with?
I mean, I think in order of likelihood, I think Chris Boucher is probably one, and Kelly Olynyk is probably two. And, you know, the number one reason in each of those cases is they have contracts that are that fit into a number of trade exceptions or signing exceptions. And, you know, they're both, I think Chris is 10-8 and Kelly's around 12-8. And those, there's a the mid-level exception this year is 12.84, I think. And if you're under that number and you haven't used that tool in your roster building arsenal or toolbox, you can sign those players even if you're, say, over the luxury tax. It'll cost you money, but it's doable. I think, and each of them in their own way represent, as I was saying before, a solution, a potential solution to, you know, a challenge an elite team might have. And really, you know, you're talking about if we miss 8 games with injury down the stretch with player Y, do we have a solution? If we need to turn the game upside down in the third quarter, let's unleash Chris Boucher. And that, you know, that's the kind of, the fine tuning some of these teams are doing. I think when you go a little further up that ladder, Davion Mitchell, by the way, who I didn't have on that list, would be another one, because he has a very, very specific skill that he's elite at, and that is on-ball defending. We've seen it over and over this season. And, you know, if you're, just to throw a name out there, if you're the Dallas Mavericks or if you're the Minnesota Timberwolves, any number of these teams, and you know you have a specific matchup you might be gauging for in the postseason, and you're looking for someone to turn the water off on player X, Y, or Z, you know, Davion Mitchell is as good as anyone in the league at doing it. And just ask him, actually. But, but I mean, I happen to agree with him. And, you know, so there's another guy, and he's on a pretty manageable number, about $8 million. So the two other guys on that list, Bruce Brown, $23 million. Everyone, I'm sure, who's listened to any of this is tired of talking about first apron, second apron, you know, all the other, you know, manifestations. But really, all anyone really needs to understand is the NBA has crept ever and ever closer to a hard cap. It used to be a very fluid financial system. There was a lot of ways, if you really wanted to spend the money, you could. And, you know, really all it cost you was dollars to build out a team. That's not the case anymore. There are real penalties, real obstacles, and real mechanical challenges to making a lot of these deals. And the bigger the number, the more difficult the equation, so to speak. So you take a guy like Bruce Brown at $23 million. It's not an easy number to trade into. And he's also at this point a little bit unproven. Like, he hasn't played basketball really, at least played well, for almost a year now. And so, you know, that's, for that reason, A, I don't think you're getting a big return if you do trade him. And, you know, I don't know if he'd be at the top of the list for teams, you know, to kind of do all this maneuvering to get. Jakob Poeltl, there are some teams out there that I could see that would fit. And, you know, I credit Eric Karine at The Athletic. He mentioned this one the other day. But, you know, you look at the Memphis Grizzlies and, you know, there's a team that's really, really good, that has all kinds of parts and potential. And, you know, what they are missing is both experience and depth at center. And, you know, you could sort of, and they have all these restrictions I've been talking about. They're actually really well positioned to make a trade if they want to. So, you know, but so Jakob Poeltl is a guy, I think, who probably has some interest around the league. But the challenge there is what kind of return the Raptors would get for a player I know they identify as really valuable in a kind of a rapid return to competitiveness. Like, if you trade him, you got to replace him. Mm-hmm. And the other challenge there is he's not the only center that could conceivably be on the market. I mean, the market's a bit flush with them. you know, the Portland Trailblazers have two of them that are going to be available, just to name one team. I think there could be teams that would be very interested in Jakob Poeltl. I'm just not convinced you'd get enough of a return that the Raptors would go, it's worth giving up something now for something in the future.
Yeah, it might be difficult for the Raptors to make something of substance happen before the deadline. I don't know how Bruce Brown went from the perfect trade chip to a basic non-asset, but here we are about a year later. We only have a minute for this one, Grange, but I'm a big NBA Cup guy for many reasons, but the biggest reason is that we got two real narratives, at least I think, out of the NBA Cup final, one being, you know, maybe the Thunder aren't ready to actually win a title this year. Maybe there are some holes there that can be exploited. And Milwaukee is back. Milwaukee Bucks might themselves be a title contender. Which of those two narratives is stronger for you?
I'm not really buying Milwaukee. I just think that they're just a little fragile and they're a little vulnerable. I do think when you look at that game, it was a near perfect game by them, and credit to them. That's a better team that delivered in a big moment. And, you know, a Thunder team that they couldn't have really played worse, at least offensively. So, you know, I'm not convinced that a seven-game series would go that way. But I will say, and I agree with your premise there, when the Thunder were here and when you just kind of stand back and look at their lineup top to bottom, you're like, even when Chet Holmgren is back, look, it's a really good team. They've proven it. They've proven it now for 2 years. No one wants to play them. But when you're talking about winning a title, like, you've got to be very lucky and close to perfect in terms of your roster construction. And I just feel like they need one more player. They certainly have the assets to do it. I guess the challenge for them is going to be, do they want to disrupt from the outside and inside seems like a near perfect team chemistry. But, you know, they've had a number of, going back to the playoffs last year, a number of really, really important games where they just have not had enough offensive punch. And it just, you know, so I think, you know, I think they got to go and get one more guy.
All right. Yeah, I agree with you. It seemed like, hey, who's going to get buckets tonight? Can it be Shea? And Shea might be an MVP candidate, and he is. But which one's easier? Which one has an easier time doing it? Well, it was clear it was Giannis. And for that reason, there might be something missing even at the top end for the Oklahoma City Thunder, as much as it pains me to say that. We appreciate the time tonight, Grange.
Boo.
Enjoy tonight. I'm just, it's honest. Yeah, honesty.
Wow.
Is it not true that Giannis...
Cole in your spot.
Give him some
In a big spot, Giannis isn't more likely to drop 30? Can do it with at least less resistance?
How about Shea rocketing out passes to Lowry Markkanen?
That'd be nice.
How do you think that would work?
That'd be nice.
Right?
I think Let's finally get aggressive.
There we go. Okay. Have a great night,
Thanks,
guys.
Thanks, Grange. Happy holidays. Michael Grange of Sportsnet. Okay, we got a couple things here in the next 2 minutes. So, best bets for tonight, Motivation Station. Newest member of the Seattle Kraken, Capo Caco, +260 tonight. Bunker's Dog of the Day is returning with vengeance. The Sharks, +220 over the Avalanche. Both goaltenders playing were just traded for each other. Gorgiev and Blackwood are switching teams, playing against each other tonight. But Gorgiev, my Bulgarian boy,
I'm on the complete other side on that. I think the Avalanche will blow the doors off Gorgiev, take their frustration
out on
that goaltender. Avalanche to win by 5 or more goals is 7-1, and I am playing that tonight.
Pathetic.
I think that's a banger. I think Gorgiev's going to get lit up.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe you do that to my heritage.
And a small same-game parlay. Not a small one.
The Bulgarians are coming for you.
16-1. I like the Nets to win, but Grady Dick to score 30+. It's going to be a Grady night, I think, because you're losing a bunch of shots with RJ Barrett, and I think the Nets, despite the conversation with Grange, may be live at plus money. So I'll try to thread it perfectly. 16-1.
All right, our 50-50 fortune supporting food for kids is now complete. Congrats to the winner, Arnel Baltazar from Toronto, who is now the GTA's newest millionaire, winning $1,284,887.50, with Food for Kids receiving the same amount. So an amazing final ticket sale, over $2.5 million. Thank you to everyone, all our amazing listeners, for this great success.
And it's true, they don't cash the big check because the big check's upstairs. And it's cool to see his big check.
Well, congratulations, everyone, and have a good night. We'll be back tomorrow.